From National Public Radio, it's Latino USA.
People would come into Ellis Island and it would be which way EJ, because they knew about Binghamton and this whole valley being a valley that would accept people.
In Binghamton, New York, an immigrant's refuge was shattered by a gunman last spring. Today on Latino USA, we return to the city.
The American Civic Association is really the only place where the foreigners come together and they have a place where to be. So once that center disappears, then the city has no other way of dealing with issues related to immigrants.
Also, a conversation with a Puerto Rican sensation, singer, composer, and actor Luis Fonsi. Coming up on Latino USA, I'm Maria Hinojosa. Stay with us. For this week in the news wrap-up, we're going to turn our attention to Latinos and the media. And joining us to discuss this topic is Ivan Roman, Executive Director of the National Association of Hispanic Journalists. Hola, Ivan. Thanks for joining us on Latino USA.
Hola, Maria.
Ivan, I want to start with an announcement that you put out to your membership, which is several hundreds of Latino journalists and other members of the mainstream media. Those of us at Latino USA are also part of the NAHJ. But you put out a notice that said you are asking all of the mainstream media to change the terminology when it's referring to immigrants coming into this country. What did you ask for and what has been the response?
We basically asked for the media to stop using the term illegals, which we have seen increase in its use over the last few years. For many years, NAHJ has recommended that the media not use terms like illegal immigrants and illegal aliens, which was another term that we don't like to be used. We prefer to use undocumented worker or undocumented immigrant. What we have seen in the last few years is as the rhetoric, the anti-immigrant rhetoric has been ratcheting up in the country, we see the media has ended up sometimes appropriating the words and the rhetoric of the anti-immigration sectors of the country and have used more and more the term illegals, which is a shortcut for illegal aliens or illegal immigrants, and that is even more offensive.
There are a lot of people, though, Ivan, who say, but wait a second, you know, it seems like that is the right term to label these people. They crossed into the country illegally, and they are living in this country illegally. So when people refer to them on their fonts on television, illegals, many people think, well, that isn't that the right term?
One, grammatically is not correct. Two, human beings are not illegal. That is just a term that's used to dehumanize people. And when you dehumanize them, what you do is you don't give them the proper voice and respect in such a controversial issue, such as immigration and immigration reform. So, and in the media, we have a responsibility to cover, you know, to have fair coverage and to foster fair coverage. You don't do it by appropriating the rhetoric of one side or the other. And that's what you do when you use terms like illegals.
Although some people would say, but isn't this a government-issued term? Isn't the government the one, the Department of Homeland Security, that says that the correct terminology is to call them illegal aliens?
Illegal alien is a government term. That's a bureaucratic term that has since, that has been criticized for a long time by some people, because alien for some people denotes extraterrestrial, it denotes other, it denotes foreign, it denotes foreigner, it denotes a lot of things that are not like you. We don't agree with the term illegal alien. We think it is a bureaucratic term, and we believe that it has a connotation that should not be within the framework of a reasoned debate about immigration. Most media do not use illegal alien anymore. Some media use illegal immigrant. Except for certain circles, they don't use illegal alien anymore. And there's a reason why.
Let's talk about the place where I used to work, CNN. And for any media watchers, this two-pronged kind of thing that's going on with CNN. On the one hand, you've got the run-up to the release of their big documentary series, Latino in America. On the other hand, you have the ratcheting up of a big push to boycott Lou Dobbs, to boycott his advertisers, to increase calls for his stepping down from CNN. What, from your perspective as somebody who's active in the media, what do you see going on with CNN in these two fronts?
It's been a long time. I mean, NHJ has criticized Lou Dobbs' coverage for a long time because we believe it was under the guise of news. It's really not fair reporting. It's reporting that's skewed to his point of view that tends to be anti-immigrant. We, though, have not taken any position regarding the campaigns out there that exist out there to get him fired or anything like that. That's the situation we have not dealt with as an organization. But we have in the past spoken to CNN's president, John Klein, and addressed this issue with him many years ago.
Iván Román, thanks so much for joining us on Latino USA.
Thank you, Maria.
Iván Román is the executive director of the National Association of Hispanic Journalists based in Washington, D.C. It's Latino USA. I'm Maria Hinojosa. When a community is thriving, there's often a place where news is exchanged, where meetings are held, friends are greeted. This place might be a church, it might be a restaurant, or a corner bar. And this place goes a long way to making life good. For immigrants, this is even more true. It's a gathering place that can become a refuge. Last April, a man opened fire at an immigrant services center in Binghamton, New York. 13 people, most of them recent immigrants, were killed at the American Civic Association. The shooter, an immigrant himself, Jivali Wong, then took his own life. We asked reporter Brian Mann, who covered the original story, to return to Binghamton, and he has this report.
Lubomir Zobny sits in his dining room, surrounded by reminders of his native Ukraine. A sheaf of wheat in a blue vase, an Orthodox icon on the wall.
Тут ми маємо хату. Котра є українська хата, і маємо всілякі пам'ятки від Марії.
He reads out loud from a letter of condolence from a neighbor, written in Ukrainian.
What I essentially said is, this is a Ukrainian house. We have here, we have a lot of remembrances of Maria. So,
his wife Maria, who was killed in the shooting, was 60 years old. A caseworker at the American Civic Association and a prominent Ukrainian activist. Here she is being interviewed on local television in 2006.
What Ukraine needs now is for the West to support that democracy, to have ties with Ukraine. What Ukraine needs now is also medical.
When Maria died, Lubomir says it tore a hole in his family, but it also shattered Binghamton's Ukrainian community. Maria was the one who organized church suppers at the Orthodox Church and camping trips for the kids. They were even planning a trip back to the Ukraine.
She would always organize everything. She would do everything that was required. And that is really hard now.
5 months after the shooting, Binghamton's entire immigrant community is still struggling. Newly arrived immigrants turn up regularly on the doorstep of the American Civic Association, looking for help with green cards and jobs and language classes. But the building where the shootings took place remains closed. Andrew Baranofsky, ACA's executive director, sits in a temporary office in a nearby church. He looks exhausted and says he still can't fathom what happened here.
My focus has been on trying to pull the organization out and be able to continue its mission and also take care of myself at this point.
In the hours after the shooting, no one knew what was happening or what it meant. People feared that the gunman might be an anti-immigrant extremist. But police soon confirmed that the story was very different and in a way more troubling and more confusing. It turned out the shooter was himself an immigrant, an ethnic Chinese from Vietnam named Jivali Wong, and he had studied English at the American Civic Association. Here's Binghamton Police Chief Joseph Sikuski.
We picked up that he was, apparently people were making fun of him. He felt that he was being degraded because from what we get is his inability to speak English, and he was upset about that.
Angela Leach, president of the American Civic Association's board, spoke at a press conference, sounding baffled and dismayed.
That this tragedy should have happened in our community, to our friends who only wanted to advance their knowledge and love of America, is unbearable.
Binghamton has a long immigrant tradition that dates back to the early 1900s. Mayor Matt Ryan says Eastern Europeans flocked to the city's working-class suburbs, looking for work in the Endicott Johnson shoe factory.
People would come into Ellis Island and it would be, which way, EJ? That's what the only words they were taught in Europe, because they knew about Binghamton and this whole valley being a valley that would accept people, give them a decent job.
These days, many of the towering red brick factories are boarded up. Storefronts are empty and jobs are hard to find. Ryan says newcomers still arrive daily, but in some ways they're more damaged, more vulnerable.
The reality is people used to come for jobs, and a lot of times now they come to for political asylum reasons and escaping from war. Some of the victims of this tragedy were here to escape Iraq and the Middle East conflicts.
On a blistering summer afternoon, Patrick Lamadong is idling on a street corner. He's a refugee from Sudan and says the American Civic Association shooting spread a lot of fear among immigrants.
It gives a bad reputation to this town, you know. A lot of people are thinking of moving out and all that.
By most measures, Binghamton is still safe. There is little crime here, and the schools are good. But Lamadong says even before the shooting, tension was rising.
It's been hard, like I know, you know, there's a lot of people get laid off, like, so that's the competition is now high, you know.
Authorities say the man responsible for the massacre, Jivirly Wong, was mentally ill. But he too had been laid off last winter from his job at a vacuum factory. Reverend Lee Do is a pastor at the Vietnamese Baptist Church here and knew Jivirly Wong's family.
Immigrant who come here to this country in this economy, they very hard time.
The lead organization that was trying to help immigrants cope with these hardships was the American Civic Association. Maria Teresa Ramiro, who moved to Binghamton from Colombia 15 years ago, volunteered there as a translator.
The American Civic Association is really the only place where those people, the foreigners, come together and they have a place where to be. So once that center disappears, then the city has no other way of dealing with issues related to immigrants.
Ramiro took part in a conference this summer organized to promote healing and a more open discussion of the shooting, led by Jorge Rubio Voler.
This type of event can actually make some people in the community even more distrustful of these violent people that are immigrants. Look at what they can do to each other.
Rubio Voler is an expert in nonviolent communication, originally from Bogota, Colombia.
Violence is enormously contagious because it presents a very simple fairy tale. There is good people, there is bad people, and we just need to find those bad people and do something to them, contain them, you know, do something about them.
Binghamton has tried to open a new conversation about the future of its immigrant community. Interfaith services have been held. But Mayor Ryan says controversy erupted this summer after church groups planted tulips to honor the dead and included a tulip for the shooter, Jivirly Wong.
It was 14 that were planted, and some people thought it should have only been 13. And we thought everybody was a victim here, but certainly the perpetrator's family was certainly a victim here. In fact, they moved away and were actually fearful for, you know, their lives.
The 14th flower was later torn up. Nobody knows who did it, but the flower was not replanted. Kasim Kapuz is imam at the local mosque where two of the slain women worshipped, one from Iraq, the other from Pakistan. He sits in his office, hands folded in his lap, staring at the floor. It makes it hard, Kapuz says, that the violence at the American Civic Association erupted just when these families thought they were safe.
They are coming from these troubling places to here and to this peaceful, very quiet, settled place, and they were learning English there in ACA, and unexpectedly this happened. It was a shock to them. They were not ready to confront this tragedy.
The truth is that many of the people best equipped to help Binghamton through this time, people like Ukrainian activist Maria Zobny, died that April day. The search for new voices and new leaders within the immigrant community has only just begun. For Latino USA, I'm Brian Mann.
Last week, we lost one of the original voices of the Chicano civil rights movement. Poet Angela de Hoyos passed away last week in San Antonio. She was among the first Chicana poets to publish a collection and a mentor to a generation of Texas writers. Born in Coahuila, Mexico, Angela de Hoyos moved with her family to San Antonio at a young age. She was greatly affected by the hardships endured by migrant farm workers, and her work embodied their struggle for social justice. Her poem, Arise Chicano, published in 1975, was a rallying cry for the movement. Arise Chicano. In your migrant's world of hand-to-mouth days, your children go smileless to a cold bed. The bare walls rock by their same wry song, a ragged dirge, thin as the air. I have seen you go down under the shrewd heel of exploit, your long sons of brutal sweat with ignoble pittance crowned. Trapped in the never-ending fields where you stoop, dreaming of sweeter dawns, while the mocking whip of slavehood confiscates your moment of reverie. Or beneath the stars offended by your rude songs of rebellion, when at last you shroud your dreams and with them your hymn of hope. Thus, a bitterness in your life. Wherever you turn for solace, there is an embargo. How to express your anguish when not even your burning words are yours? They are borrowed from the festering barrios of poverty, and the sadness in your eyes only reflects the mute pain of your people. Arise, Chicano, that divine spark within you surely says, wash your wounds and swathe your agonies. There is no one to succor you. You must be your own messiah. Angela de Hoyos passed away on September 24th in her home in Southside, San Antonio. She was 85 years old. Time now for your comments from you, our listeners. Last week, we launched our collaboration with StoryCorps, Historias. Halen from Round Rock, Texas, heard Gustavo Mestas telling his daughter Ileana about fleeing Cuba. I'm 16 years old, and though I am not Latina, my mother was also an immigrant who had nothing, worked hard, and gave me everything. We were driving in silence when the first story began. By the end of it, I had burst into tears. Hearing my family's story echoed in theirs gave me even more respect for my mother and other parents like her, as well as a renewed appreciation for what my mother has given me. A few weeks ago, I interviewed Dr. James Walter, a professor of bioethics at Loyola Marymount University. Our conversation focused on the ethical question of excluding undocumented immigrants from healthcare. Russ Wayman had this response. Why, only in the case of the undocumented, the least bad of all criminals, do we want to add on a plethora of punishments? No driver's licenses, no healthcare, etc. Is it somehow worse to be here without proper documentation than it is to commit armed robbery? What is it about our 12 million undocumented residents that makes them so much worse criminals than they deserve all this extra punishment? We do appreciate all of your comments. Let us know what you think. Our listener comment line is 1-800-535-5533. Our email address is lusa@npr.org. In a minute, el cantante del momento, singer, composer, and actor Luis Fonsi, a Puerto Rican sensation, coming up on Latino USA, quédense con nosotros. We'll be right back. You're listening to Latino USA. I'm Maria Hinojosa. Puerto Rico. The great singer and band leader Héctor Lavoe famously named the island La Isla del Encanto, the Island of Enchantment. But besides the obvious beauty of the Puerto Rican archipelago, perhaps the most enchanting thing about Puerto Rico is the music and its many, many famous musicians. Héctor Lavoe, Willie Colon, José Feliciano, Ricky Martin, and now a new star, singer and composer, and yes, telenovela actor Luis Fonsi.
Me quedo callado. Soy como un niño dormido que puede despertarse con apenas solo un ruido. Cuando menos te lo esperas, cuando menos lo imagino, sé que un día no me aguanto y voy y te miro y te lo digo a los gritos.
Luis Fonsi was born in San Juan and moved to Orlando, Florida as a young boy. While attending Florida State University in 1998, he landed his first recording contract, and the rest, as they say, es historia. His Grammy-nominated album is Palabras del Silencio, Words of Silence. And Luis Fonsi joins me now on Latino USA. Welcome to our program, Luis.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here with you.
I want to ask you about what it's like to hear your biggest hit right now, which is... Well, which one is it right now? Because it's either, you know, I thought
that's
it was
a good problem.
No me doy por vencido, or aquí estoy yo, right. Or what is it this week?
Well, you know, the new song is Joya Por Dentro. I don't know if it qualifies as a big hit yet because we just released it a couple of weeks ago. So I have to be humble and it's hopefully I can say it's an upcoming hit.
¿Qué puedo hacer? Llueve por dentro.
From this record, you know, I've been blessed with two number one hits. The first one being No Me Doy Por Vencido, and the second one, Aquí Estoy Yo. So those are two really big songs.
Well, why don't we start out with Llueve Por Dentro, which is the one that you're kind of hoping makes it to the third big hit off this album,
right.
Palabras de Silencio.
Right.
Quiero vivir para siempre junto a ti, no importa nada. Y huir de este silencio que se roba mis mañanas.
Tell me about this particular. I mean, it's a real ballad. It's mm-hmm. you with your voice. It's old school kind of, you know, songbird from Puerto Rico. Tell me about the song.
Llueve Por Dentro goes back to the sad, you know, dramatic ballad. You know, that sometimes we all love to hear. I can't lie. I love to write those. You know, I call them the cortavenas, which. I don't know how to translate that, but I guess, you know.
Oh, well, let's see. We could just say it's slicing your veins.
Slicing your veins. Yeah, it sounds more dramatic in English, but it's sort of a genre in Spanish, you know, the cortavena genre.
Si tu mirada se clava en mí, luego me arranca el alma, no hay adiós. Solo hay entre tú y yo una distancia.
I wrote it with a wonderful songwriter who I completely admire and respect, Amaury Gutierrez. And we got together and we just wrote this song, you know, Joya Por Dentro, which is that inside rain, that inside storm that we sometimes feel and that we have to hide, we have to put a facade, we have to, you know, sort of put a mask on when we're out and about and act like nothing, you know, nothing's wrong, but deep inside there's a hurricane going on, you know, inside our heart and in our head and our bodies. And that's sort of what the song is about.
So let's talk for a minute about growing up in Orlando, Florida.
Yeah.
Tell me a little bit about what it was like to grow up there and finding your own identity as a young Latino during the 90s in mid-Florida.
I pretty much had to leave, you know, everything behind to start from scratch. And when you're a little kid, you know, it's you don't really know what you're getting into. You know, my parents obviously did it, you know, for us to have a better future and for them to have, you know, just sort of a new start.
And what about the influence on you musically? The fact that you were not only in a Puerto Rican community. You were being exposed to all kinds of Latin American music and backgrounds. How much did that have a role in you kind of saying, this is the artist I want to be?
I think as a musician, I was able to grow. I never left my Latin heritage. I've never stopped listening to, you know, Spanish music that I completely love. I never stopped dancing salsa, you know. That always stayed with me, and it's still, you know, with me.
I guess that meant something for me when I was listening to the song No Me Doy Por Vencido, because if I'm not mistaken, I started hearing that, and I was like, espérate un segundo, I hear a little bit of Mexican stuff going
you
on
sure
here.
Yeah.
And as a Mexican who, you know, spent 30 years in New York City, I was like, oh, talk about the influence of Mexico, Mexican music. You even have a Mexican version of No Me Doy Por Vencido on your album.
You know, I wrote it with an Argentine, you know, with Claudia Brand, who's from Argentina. So this is completely multicultural, you know. We definitely are not, you know, we weren't born, you know, with a mariachi chip inside of us. And when we did the melody of the song, we both looked at each other and we're like, wow, this has such a ranchera vibe to it, you know.
It definitely does. Que brilla más cada día, porque estoy tan solo un paso de ganarme la alegría, porque el corazón levanta una tormenta enfurecida desde aquel momento en que te vi. I said, you know, why don't we add a little bit of that vibe in the guitar? We'll put a, you know, a trumpet in the background, not overdo it, but just have sort of a pop rock song with a little bit of that ranchera flair. I think it could be a cool thing, you know, and Armando, the producer, completely understood it once, you know, I told him kind of how I wanted the song to be built, and it was born, and it worked so well that we actually ended up doing a real mariachi version, which is something that I had never done, and I think it came out great, you know, so it's great to, you know, to be able to try new things. Well, we're so excited for you and so happy that you've had so much success. And thank you so much for this beautiful album, Palabras del Silencio. It's very, very moving. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you so much. It's a pleasure to be here and talking to you. And thank you for everybody listening.
Luis Fonsi's most recent album is Palabras del Silencio. It's available from Universal Music Latino. And for this week, this has been Latino USA. Thanks for listening. Latino USA is produced by Walter Morgan, Mincha Jacob, Angela Maldonado, Alex Avila, and Katie Davis. Our executive producer is Sean Collins. Our listener comment line is 1-800-535-5533. Our email address is lusa@npr.org. Production support for Latino USA comes from KUT Radio, the University of Texas at Austin, the William and Salome Scanlon Foundation of Austin and San Antonio, and the Marguerite Casey Foundation. I'm Maria Hinojosa. Join us next week for another edition of NPR's Latino USA.
Support for NPR is provided by A. Mark Foundation, supporting ProCon.org, providing the pros and cons of controversial issues, including health care and immigration. By Ford Foundation, working with visionaries on the front lines of social change worldwide at FordFoundation.org. And by the George Lucas Educational Foundation, creator of Edutopia, your source for what works in public education. Learn more at Edutopia.org. This is NPR, National Public Radio.